Enjoying the guitar wizardry of David Lindley. And a lot of people have recorded that song, Mercury Blues, but I like David Lindley's version best. How about you? We are talking Final Warning, understanding the seven trumpets of Revelation with Carl Gallups, and we will get back to that conversation in just a few moments. And then in the final hour of the program, a mere 53 minutes and counting away, we will open up the lines and your questions and comments for Carl Gallups. Again, we are discussing the seven trumpets of Revelation. We ain't talking Dizzy Gillespie and Miles Davis here, my friends. Back with more here on Coast to Coast AM. We are back here on Coast to Coast AM. Richard Serrett, broadcasting from Toronto. Say hello on Twitter at Richard Serrett and the website richardserrett.com. Carl Gallups is with us as we discuss the seven trumpets of Revelation. And we were talking before the break, Carl, of trumpet number three, which certainly, you know, a lot of coincidences perhaps, but it seems to be pointing directly at the Chernobyl nuclear accident of 1986, April 1986, coming up on the 29th anniversary, and the trumpet talks about Wormwood, or John, rather. The Apostle John mentions that this star, and the name of the star is Wormwood, and you've drawn the parallels between Wormwood and Chernobyl. Wormwood, in Ukrainian, is, you say, Chernobyl, or Chernobyl in Ukrainian means Wormwood. All right, now, let me just back up on that a little bit, just for those who missed it. Now, again, for those who don't understand how John could mistake a nuclear accident for a star, explain that one more time quickly.
Yeah. And then if you'll allow me, there are two more startling things about this that I just really need for your audience to know about this trumpet three. But yes, how could he? Well, first of all, he's on a rock island 2,000 years ago. They're still riding camels and walking everywhere they're going. How does a man in that condition, who's thrust into our lifetime and beyond, everything he sees looks like science fiction? How do you describe airplanes and space shuttles and rocket ships and nuclear bombs and nuclear technology, nuclear power plants and major wars, World War One, World War Two, you know, all the Middle East uprising, just skyscrapers, interstate highways, automobiles? How do you describe that? Well, you have to use imagery. You have to use the best descriptions of what you have in your day and time. Plus, you got to remember, John was also writing to the church of his day. It was the seven letters to the seven churches. So there was a meaning, there was a level of comfort and encouragement, and there was a level of understanding for the people, the church of his day. Plus, it also had to speak to the people of God and whoever else would be willing to look at it in the very last days. So what a monumental undertaking, but God gives him the words, he gives him the imagery, but in the meantime, from peppered throughout the book of Revelation are these clues, these what I call key word associations, and trumpet number three is a perfect example, because at the end of it he says, and the name of it, John, write this down, is, and of course it was probably given in Hebrew and written in Greek. Of course, we translate it to English, and it's Wormwood, but if it's translated to Ukrainian, it's Chernobyl. Now, so that's how, you know, he would describe it. He said, I saw this it's something fiery coming from the heavens, and it pollutes waters, it pollutes the ground, the waters, and it kills people, and it's on fire and it's falling from the sky. Well, as I said, I mean, I've got it all documented in my book. You've got this nuclear reactor number four that blows over a half a mile into the sky, concrete chunks and steel radiated on fire, falling, raining down upon the city and upon the nuclear reactor area. polluting waters, polluting the ground, killing people, radiating, poisoning. I mean, here we are almost 30 years later, Richard, and the place is uninhabitable, and radiation poisoning has blown and leaked all over Europe and into the eastern seaboard of the United States and beyond, and now thyroid cancer rates have gone up astronomically in the United States and in Europe, all
has it
related
in fact,
to Chernobyl.
Has it in fact, Carl, though, can we verify that Chernobyl or Wormwood has in fact poisons a third of the planet's freshwater sources? Because that's John says specifically,
yes, thank
a third.
Yes, thank you for asking that. First of all, I do a deep study of that in my book, and it's interesting. People, you know, they look at all this, they see all of this imagery and all of this symbolism. But when they see these terms third, and it's one third is used throughout it, they want to, all of a sudden, they want to be literal with that. In other words, everything else is symbolic, but they say, oh, but it's one third. But when you do a study of the original language of the New Testament, the Greek, where it says earth, one third of the earth, we immediately think when we use that word earth, in the English, we use it in many different ways. If I reach my hand into the soil, I'm planting a garden, and I say, "Boy, the earth is, this earth is gorgeous here, isn't it? Look how dark this is." You know, we might say dirt, but we could say earth, or we could speak of a certain geographical location, or we could speak of the globe. Well, as a matter of fact, in the Greek, that word earth does not have to mean the entire globe. As a matter of fact, the first and most predominant word translation of that Greek word means a certain geographical location or what we would say a theater, you know. So it doesn't have to be the literal whole earth, and the number one third doesn't have to be literal, although I don't have a problem with that. I mean, God can certainly, you know, point out very literal amount, but think of the number one third for a minute, Richard, and I point this out in my book. If it is symbolic, what does it mean? Well, if you look at a pie, you know, the whole pie is three thirds, of course. The vast majority of the pie is two thirds, you know, but one third would mean, well, it's not the whole thing. And it's not even the vast majority of it, but it's a good chunk. It is something that's noteworthy. It's something it's enough that the world would have to take notice of it. It's a big enough event. It's a big enough thing that you can't ignore it. And that's what I believe this number one third, which is pervasive throughout these trumpets. I think that's what that means. Now it could be literal as well. But I don't think that it has to mean, if you do a study of the words and of the imagery and of the symbolism, it doesn't have to mean one third of the entire globe. Now, here's what's interesting about all of this. Richard, I've got documented in my book, there were two United Nations ambassadors, and they went before, one of them was the president of the General Assembly one year. Right after this nuclear explosion in Chernobyl, one of them went before the UN, quoted Revelation chapter 8 and the third trumpet vision, chapter 8, verses 9 and 10. He quoted that and then talked about Wormwood meaning Chernobyl and then said this, what has happened to us is imagery that comes straight out of the Bible. I mean, this was a United Nations ambassador from the Ukraine who's, you know, born and raised in Ukraine. This guy spoke four or five languages, Ukrainian being his native language.
Yes.
11 years later, another Ukrainian ambassador, because, you know, Chernobyl 11 years later was still horrible. And he gives another speech, a lengthy speech. And in that speech, he talks about the Chernobyl nuclear disaster. He quotes this scripture again. This is a completely different ambassador. He again affirms that the word wormwood means Chernobyl and vice versa, that it translates that way. So all of this is documented in the book, but watch how this ties in to today's headline news. I mean, today's headline news, Richard. Watch. So this is all happened almost 30 years ago, 29 years ago this April, as you said, is the anniversary. So let's just round it off, say about 30 years ago. 30 years ago, all right? But watch. When it exploded, 100 times more radiation than Hiroshima and Nagasaki, they immediately set about trying to contain this thing because it was still spewing radiation. So they built a concrete sarcophagus over the whole thing. Your listeners can get on Google. They can. National Geographic has been running articles on this for years. They built this huge concrete. They entombed it. They encased it in a big concrete covering, a sarcophagus. But the concrete sarcophagus was designed only to last about 20 years. And they knew that that would give them, that would buy them some time. By the way, you know, hundreds of people died, and some say thousands of people died building that sarcophagus because of radiation poisoning.
Right, but, yes, that's true.
Yeah, but what they did, they said, look, we got to buy some time. We got to buy some time. So they bought themselves 20 years. Well, we're 29 years later. So guess what? Just this last year or two, they realized, I mean, the thing is cracking. It's starting to leak a little bit and to leach, and they know that if it crumbles apart, scientists say it'll be worse than the first explosion, if you can imagine that. Worse than. Well, so they begin to, I mean, again, National Geographic 4 or 5 years ago wrote a huge piece on that, and they talked about it in great detail about how terrible it would be if they don't get that thing patched, repaired, or something else built around it to contain it. Well, so a couple of years ago, they start working on it, and they're working feverishly on it, and they're trying to contain this waiting disaster that could be worse than the first. And guess what happens in this last year? Russia attacks Ukraine. And, of course, Russia figures prominently into biblical prophecy and biblical end times prophecy. A lot of people equate it to, you know, Gog and Magog prophecies, and some people dispute that. But the bottom line is a lot of people see a picture of Russia being involved in the last days as being a tremendous aggressor that kind of stirs things up in Europe and the Middle East. Now we've got Russia attacking Ukraine while Ukraine is feverishly trying to contain this nuclear disaster that's threatening to become even more disastrous. And in the midst of trying to defend their nation, defend their borders, they stopped work on what they were doing.
Right. That, in other words, again, the final chapter on Chernobyl has yet to be written. And by the time all is said and done, it may well pollute one-third of the Earth's fresh water or more.
Exactly. That's the point I'm making, is that, look, it's still going. So don't say, oh, well, it didn't do anything to one-third of the Earth, so therefore, well, wait a minute. First of all, it's still unraveling. Second of all, as I do in my book and as I just did briefly with your audience, if you'll do a deep word study of that, it doesn't have to be a literal one-third of the entire Earth in the first place.
Gotcha.
But it could very well become that, as you said, because it's still ongoing. This is not something that happened 30 years ago and, oh, well, it went away, no big deal. That didn't affect me. I mean, Starbucks is open in my town in the United States, so everything is fine. Well, no, it's not. And this is something of worldwide significance. It's something of monumental significance. It's certainly a one-third event, you know. It's maybe not three-thirds, maybe not two-thirds, but it's certainly significant, and it's threatening to blow again, and Russia's attacking, and now they can't rebuild it. And right there in the scriptures, written 2,000 years ago, and what we have to do, see, I'm not dogmatically proclaiming this is that. I'm not jumping up and down saying, I have discovered something. No, millions of people around the world see this. Two Ukrainian ambassadors spoke to it long before I ever saw it. That's the reason I started looking at it. But the bottom line is, this is either one of the biggest coincidences in the world, or it's exacting prophecy happening in our lifetime, because John, 2,000 years ago, he said that it was revealed to him, write this down, John, the name of this event that will occur in the future, that will be a warning to the world that the Lord is soon to come. The name of it, John, is Chernobyl. If he's giving it in Ukrainian, that's what he would say. He would say, it's Chernobyl, John. Write it down. It means nothing to you, and it will mean nothing for 2,000 years. But in 1986 and beyond, for those who care enough to study and read and look and see, they will get it. It will be a key word. It will unlock this mystery, and they will see and they will know that a trumpet harbinger has been sounded, and God's word is the only place that gives it. Now, it is undeniable, Richard, the correlation between those two words, Wormwood and Chernobyl. And for people who say, well, it doesn't mean that, well, go argue with two Ukrainian ambassadors who were born and raised in the language. They say it does mean that.
Right. Well, yes, so, because there are other quarters out there who are suggesting that maybe, possibly, that Wormwood actually means another bitter plant from that region called mugwort. So I'll let the linguists sort of sort that out. Is it wormwood? Is it mugwort?
Yeah. Well, I sort that out in my book. I show that those words are used synonymously and interchangeably by the Ukrainian people, and I have that documented. So again, I've gone to great detail in my book to point all that out because I know what the arguments are.
We are approaching another break here, but let's get this conversation going, and then again we'll continue. And just a reminder that at the top of the hour, fast approaching, we'll open up the lines, and you can have your questions and comments ready for Carl Gallops, who joins us here on Coast to Coast. The fourth trumpet. Following the sounding of the fourth trumpet, a third of the light that shines from the sun, moon, and stars became dark from these celestial bodies being struck. This catastrophe caused complete darkness for a third of a day, during the day, even through night hours. That's what John says regarding the fourth trumpet. Make sense of that for me. We've got about a minute, and then we'll pick it up on the other side.
I don't know what translation you're using, but the original Greek doesn't say it caused complete darkness, but that is a English translation, and that's fine.
It's the Wikipedia Bible. It's the Wikipedia Bible.
there's the problem. Okay. But that's okay. No, and I'm not trying to be nitpicky. I just want to make it clear that the original Greek doesn't say that it caused complete darkness. And that's important because in this particular vision, the fourth trumpet, again, we hear that number one-third, a third of the sun, a third of the moon, a third of the stars. So is that literal? Well, it could be. But if we take it for the symbolism, which is just immersed in all of these trumpets. Again, why is everything else symbolic, but all of a sudden this has to be literal? You see what I'm saying?
So I do. Listen, continue. Sorry, my apologies. Go ahead.
No, I'm sorry. I was going to say, so if it's symbolic, then it means, okay, it's not complete darkness, and it's not even major darkness, but it's enough that something that the world has to notice, somebody's going to notice this, something happens after Chernobyl, if you will, that then tells the world, look, here's another phenomena that you need to look at. Well, you know, by the way, when we get to the fifth trumpet later on, that's the one that's going to blow people away. But when I looked at the third trumpet and I saw Wormwood and Chernobyl and all that stuff I've already told your audience, I said, oh my gosh, that's amazing. Well, I looked at the fourth one, I've got to admit, I scratched my head. I said, well, what in the world has happened that has caused a dimming of the light that reaches the world? And so on a whim, a fluke, of course, you know, I'm a Christian. I come from a biblical worldview, so I believe it was the hand of God directing this. I just went to the internet and I just put in Google one day here. Oh, I don't know, a couple of years ago, I just put in the words global dimming or dimming of the light. You know, global dimming. To my shock, not only is there a phenomena called global dimming, but the New York Times, again, had a headline article that the subtitle was, in the last half of the last century, the world literally became a much darker place. I began reading that article and discovered that for the last 50 years, this is a little before Chernobyl, but now lapses over past Chernobyl and into our time, that scientists around the world have been documenting a phenomena called global dimming, and they are saying that anywhere, and this is the headline article, New York Times, the headline said anywhere from, get this, 10% to 37% reduction in the amount of light reaching the Earth depending upon which part of the world you're in. In some parts of the world, it's as much as, it's as little as 10% light.
Let's just hold it. Let's hold it right there, Carl, and let that resonate in our skulls for a few moments. We'll take a time out and come back discussing the seven trumpets. Final warning, Carl Gallup's here on Coast to Coast. My City Was Gone. That was written by Chrissy Hynde and The Pretenders. That was the B-side to the single release Back on the Chain Gang, which was a huge, huge hit for The Pretenders back in 1982. Earlier in the program, right off the top, in fact, I mentioned an email I received from a Robert Dunn, who took a video on his 3G video camera mid-afternoon last Thursday, pointing it up at the sun using the negative filter, I suppose you would say, and sent me the video. I looked at it, and sure enough, as he's describing in the video, you can see this celestial object just to the left of the sun. And he suggests, Robert Dunn does, that that object may in fact be Nibiru, Planet X, which is reportedly four times the size and mass of Jupiter, our largest planet in the solar system. And of course, not only is this brown dwarf supposedly heading toward us, it's also bringing with it seven other planets and a debris field. It's like its own little mini solar system. Well, we have tweeted that. If you go to the Twitter feed at Coast to Coast AM, you can see that right at the top of the Twitter feed, and just click on the link there, and it'll take you right to that video and decide for yourself, is that in fact some sort of a harbinger? Is that a sign in the sky telling us about the end times? Is it Nibiru, Planet X? Check it out and let me know. Back to my conversation with Carl Gallup, the author of Final Warning, Understanding the Trumpet Days of Revelation, when Coast to Coast AM continues right after this. All right, let's get back to that fourth trumpet blast. But before we do, Carl Gallup's, why the trumpet? Well, you know, the symbology of the horn. I'm thinking Old Testament. I'm thinking the temple. I'm thinking the ram's horn, which was sounded. In the Jewish calendar, we have the feast day of trumpets. What's the connection?
Thank you. Yeah, I do quite a in-depth study of that very question in my book, this symbolism of trumpets in the Bible. Most of the time that word is used, it is indicative of the shofar, you know, the ram's horn kind of trumpet that has that eerie, haunting, beautiful sound that, can you imagine that resonating through the mountains of ancient Israel? So the shofar. Now, there's a few times where the word trumpet would mean something more like the silver, you know, the silver kind of coronet-style trumpets that we see. But the bottom line, you've asked the symbolism. Well, the very first time we see the word trumpet and hear of a trumpet blast in the scriptures is in the book of Exodus, when the children of Israel have come out of Egypt after 400 years of slavery. They're standing at the foot of Mount Sinai. Moses is there. Moses has told them that the Lord himself will descend upon the mountain and will speak to them. And we find out later that happens, that the people fear it so badly, they beg Moses, say, please, don't let this happen again. Tell God not to speak to us. Tell him to speak to you. You know, our hearts failed us when this happened. Well, it was preceded, of all things, first time we hear it in the scriptures, by a mighty trumpet blast from heaven. Just the air, the sky was pierced. You know, remember, this was 3,000-something years ago. There were no airplanes. There was no noise pollution. It was just the birds singing and the wind blowing, and they were standing at the foot of the mountain, and the heavens filled with this shofar-like sounding trumpet blast that over a million people that were gathered around that mountain heard and terrified them. But it was an announcement that God himself, the presence of God, was going to descend upon the mountain. The mountain burst into flames, a smoke, a Shekinah glory of God surrounded the mountain, and God spoke to the people out of that trumpet blast. That's the first
Gabriel,
time.
Come blow your horn.
Yeah, really. And so as you read through the scriptures, And again, I did several chapters of study on it, and I want to get a quick answer to your audience. But as you read through the scriptures, you discover that time and time and time and time again, when you hear of the trumpets being blown, it's to announce the arrival of a king, it's to call God's people to arms, to battle, it's to announce the attack of an enemy, it's to announce a coming danger. So it's always the purpose of the trumpet is not for the unbelievers so much as it is for the people of God. It's a sound from God. It's a call to worship. The trumpets are used. It's a call to proclaim that God is in his holy temple. I mean, I give all of these illustrations from the scriptures in my book. So that's the symbolism of the trumpet. So by the time we get to Revelation, now we're in the last book. We're dealing with the last trumpets ever heard of in the Bible. And when the seventh trumpet blows, by the way, it is the very last time the word trumpet is used. So it literally is the last trumpet in the Bible.
Okay, and so back to the fourth trumpet, Carl. Again, yeah. Let me just set the stage again. We were talking about a third of the light shining from the sun, moon and stars will become dark from these celestial bodies being struck.
Yeah.
What
yeah,
is it talking about?
Yeah, that's what it says. And right before the break, I was just revealing. And again, I want to say to the audience, I am not dogmatic about this stuff. I don't jump up and down and say, this is it. My goodness, we have discovered it. This is it. I'm saying, look at these correlations. Look at these amazing either coincidences or fulfillment of prophecy. John says 2,000 years ago that near the end, there's going to be something called Chernobyl that happens that pollutes waters and kills people. And then also, right about that same time, there's going to be a global dimming effect, if you will, that the amount of light that reaches the earth will be diminished. All right, now, let me read this to you. May 2004, the New York Times, I've got it right in front of me, the title of the article, Globe Grows Darker as Sunshine diminishes 10% to 37%. That's the headline article of the New York Times in 2004. And the very first words of that article say, in the second half of the 20th century, the world became quite literally a darker place. Now, the article goes on to describe this phenomena that is relatively recent in human history in its recording of global dimming is what they call it. It's reported by New York Times. It's reported by the BBC. It's reported by Nova. It's reported by The Guardian UK. It's reported by an American Thinker magazine. I mean, and I've got all of this documented in my book. And these scientists from around the world for the last 50 years have been recording this. And I know some people would say, well, maybe it's due to air pollution. Well, that's what they thought. They talk about this. But then they went to the Antarctic, where there is no air pollution, and they said, oh my gosh, it has dimmed down here. The amount of sunlight reaching the earth in the Antarctic, it has dimmed as well. And this article went on to say that that the very least it has dimmed is 10%, but it says in some regions like Asia, the United States, and Europe, the drop is even steeper, and in Hong Kong, in that area, it was as much as 37%. So this is a phenomena, and one of the scientists said, this is like a big gorilla sitting on the dining room table, and nobody's talking about it. And because they've been studying this for 50 years, and you've got a significant decrease in the amount of light that's reaching the earth, all over the earth.
But the fourth trumpet, Carl, the fourth trumpet says, or John writes, the light that shines from the sun, moon, and stars became dark from these celestial bodies being struck. What does that mean?
Well, I don't know what it means, but the translation I'm reading, and this is an English translation, but I can go to the Greek and look at it, but it says the fourth angel sounded his trumpet, and a third of the sun was struck, a third of the moon, a third of the stars, so that a third of them turned dark, a third of the day was without light, and a third of the night. So in other words, there's the amount of light reaching the earth is decreased significantly. Now, struck, That, I think that would simply speak to the fact that this is another harbinger. This is another warning. This is another trumpet sound. This is something that happens supernaturally. This is something that God causes to happen as a warning to the earth that these things are now taking place. If trumpet three was Chernobyl, and there is no doubt that the word wormwood means Chernobyl, now, is it that Chernobyl nuclear disaster? Well, let's just say that it is. If it is, then trumpet number four seems to be speaking to a phenomena like global dimming. But here's the thing. Just like Chernobyl's not over, neither is this global dimming phenomena. I mean, this article was written in 2004, but there have been other articles written since then, and they're still recording this phenomena, and they still don't know what's causing it, and they don't have a clue what it's all about. But they know, starting about 50 years ago, the amount of light reaching the earth has dimmed significantly all over the world. So, you know, so I put this, I mean, I wrote this in my book as a possibility, and I say in that chapter, you know, I'm not prepared to say this is that, but good gracious, in light of the details we found in trumpet 3 and the shocking details that are in trumpet 5, the two trumpets around it, trumpet 4, you come to that, and it talks about a global dimming effect, if you will, and you say, well, yeah, but has anything like that happened? Well, as a matter of fact, it has happened. It's been being recorded for the last 50 years, and the New York Times and the BBC and NOVA and on and on and on, they're reporting on it, but very few people are talking about it.
All right, the fifth trumpet. The fifth trumpet sound is the first woe of three.
Yeah.
Before this trumpet sounds, an angel appears, flying in mid-heaven, and warns, woe, woe, woe to those who dwell on the earth because of the remaining blasts of the trumpet of the three angels who are about to sound. Walk us through the fifth trumpet, Carl.
Yeah, well, I think those three woes, and I talk about this in the book, I think those are significant. I think they're speaking of time markers that starting with the fifth trumpet, it's going to start happening quickly. And again, Richard, this is going to blow your audience away if they've never seen this. This is one of the most astounding of all of them because of the statement of the woes that, look, this, you know, trumpet 5 is going to be bad. It's going to lead to trumpet 6, which trumpet 6 looks like a major world war centered in the Middle East. It says on the Euphrates River, which is right where everything is happening right now, Richard. But the bottom line is trumpet 5, one of the most detailed, and so Let me just paraphrase this. So there's another star, if you will, but this star speaks and is given a personification. So this is how we know the stars are not literal suns hitting the earth, but these are messengers, harbingers, and it speaks of a people, a certain people that are tormented for 5 months, and it says that twice in this passage. It's a lengthy passage. 5 months, something happens to a certain people. And it says that in the midst of that tormenting, that the pits are open, the abyss, the bottomless pit is opened, and there's some fascinating word study there, and I've got it in my book. But out of that pit comes fire and smoke that fills the sky and darkens. Again, we get to this darkening effect, but it's in this specific theater. It blackens the sky. It is dark as night in the middle of the day. And then it goes on, he says, and I saw something that looked like locusts coming out of this, you know, with, it looked like they had men's faces, and they sounded like chariots thundering, and they were shooting fire out of their tails. And so, again, you got John sitting on an island 2,000 years ago, thrust into our time, looks like science fiction to him, but he's describing it. And it goes on to say, and the people, you know, they longed to die, but they couldn't die. They wanted to die, but they couldn't. And then it ends, watch this. It ends by saying, and they had as a king over them, this messenger from this bottomless pit, or the one that kind of started all of this. Watch this, Richard, whose name in Hebrew is Abaddon, and in Greek, his name is Apollyon. Now, again, Richard, when you're looking at Revelation, particularly these visions, the seals, the trumpets, you know, and everything, you come to the trumpets, and here's all of this imagery and, you know, giant locust and fire shooting out of their tails and all these different
things. Yeah, this may be the most cryptic of the seven trumpets.
Well, maybe, until you get to something that is said. It says the name of the one, the messenger, the king, it says, of all things, the name of the king who starts all of this, his name is Abaddon or Apollyon. Now, Richard, Apollyon is Greek. Abaddon is Hebrew. Those two words translated to English, of course, they mean the same thing. In English, they translate to the destroyer. If you translate the words the destroyer into Persian, and Professor Thaxton Wheeler of Harvard University Persian Studies Institute confirms this, I've got it in my book, a bunch of people out of the Middle East, authorities in the Middle East, Persian language experts, it's all documented in my book. The word destroyer in Persian is Saddam.
Uh-huh.
Now get this. Saddam Hussein invaded Kuwait. He was in there for 5 months before the coalition forces attacked. When they did attack, he retreated. He set 800 oil wells on fire that burned for 11 months and darkened the sky as black as midnight in the noonday sun. And that's an exact quote out of several articles, journalistic articles that came right out of the Gulf War during those days. Not only that, but after all of this was over, and of course, what caused it? It caused this coalition of forces, thousands of tanks crawling across the desert, shooting fire out of their tails, if you will. Thousands of helicopters filling the sky, flying through the smoke. There are pictures on the internet of those oil wells on fire, and you can see tanks and helicopters and the nasty mess and the war and the killing and the destruction and
okay,
everything.
Let me stop you there, because let me just stop you there, because let me now reiterate what the fifth trumpet says, because you've given this wonderful, this horrific mental imagery here. And it says, regarding the fifth trumpet, the star is given the key to the bottomless pit. After opening it, the smoke that rises out darkens the air and blocks the sunlight. You're saying those are the oil wells lit on fire. Then from out of the smoke, the locusts were unleashed. They were scorpion-tailed war horses, having a man's face with lion's teeth. So again, this imagery, evokes images of fighter planes and tanks and
helicopters, helicopters. Yep.
Okay, continue.
Yeah, and it goes on to say, and their wings sounded like thundering chariots. Well, if you've ever heard tanks rolling across the ground, or if you've ever heard attack helicopters, coming out of the sky, that's exactly what it sounds like. Exactly. So again, John, if this is what this is, he's nailing it. But here's the deal. Here's what I want to really go back and emphasize. It ends by saying, if you're reading it in Persian, let's just say you're reading all of this in Persian. This vision ends by saying, by the way, the king who started all of this, his name is Saddam. Now write that down, John. That means nothing to you, and it'll mean nothing for 2,000 years. But there will come a time in history when a king named Saddam is going to invade a people for 5 months, and he's going to cause smoke to come out of the ground and fire, and it's going to blacken the sky, and people are going to be in torment from it for a long time. Write it down. His name is Saddam. And when it happens, then the world will see. And I'm telling you, Richard, again, I'm not jumping up and down saying this is that. I'm not betting my life on it, but I'm saying it cannot be denied that Abaddon and Apollyon, the name of the king, translates in Persian to Saddam. It cannot be denied that Saddam was in Kuwait for 5 months before we went in there. It cannot be denied that he set 800 oil wells on fire, which are bottomless pits, if you will, ushering out fire and smoke, darkening the sky. It cannot be denied that tanks and helicopters and airplanes by the thousands crawling across the desert and flying through the skies to a man 2,000 years ago, the only way you could describe them is it looks like giant locusts shooting fire out of their tails. Then it goes on to say that people in those days longed to die, but they couldn't. Here's one of the most horrific facts. And all of this is documented heavily in my book. In fact, I spend a whole chapter on this. I go to journalistic sources, historical sources, military sources, that describe the death camps of Saddam Hussein. He imprisoned thousands of little children. He tortured them, brutalized them, raped them, often in front of their parents. Some of them he would burn, some of them he would burn to death, but most of them he tortured to the point of death and then they kept them alive for
years. All right, Carl. The sixth trumpet awaits on the other side. Back with more of my conversation with Carl Gallups right here on Coast to Coast AM. My name is Richard Serrett. Stay a while.